Hello, welcome to Body Equals Brain. This is Mandy Blake, and I'm delighted to welcome you to the course. I want to begin with a few words of orientation on science and how to listen to and interpret the science I'm going to be sharing with you in this course. And the reason I want to do this is we have a really strong cultural default in Western culture to grant truth and legitimacy and objectivity to science very automatically, so that if something is presented as research was done, or the scientist said, or Dr. So-and-so says, that we look at that as hard and fast truth. And that's, well, here's what I want to say is I would like for us in this course to have a little bit more nuanced and sophisticated way of looking at evaluating science. So what I want to do is talk about some of the strengths of science and some of the limitations of science, and let you use that as a guide as we go through this course. So let's start with some strengths. I think one of the real beauties of science, one of the reasons it's so, so valuable for us, is that it allows us to run tests that are repeatable, design controlled experiments, and by controlled, I mean we can factor out certain variables so that we can hone in on a particular variable and figure out how that variable is affecting a situation as opposed to all the other variables that might be affecting a situation. And that ability to really hone in, to create structured experiments that result in measurable results, and that can be repeated by different laboratories, by different people in different parts of the world over time, that as experiments are repeated and replicated and results come out quite consistently, then we start to go, oh, there's been, you know, like across these really large data sets, multiple times now we've concluded that variable A affects situation C, right? And then we can go, you know, most of the time that's the way it seems to work, or more than 50% of the time that's the way it seems to work. And then we can start to draw pretty robust conclusions and very reliable conclusions that we can count on. So science can lead us to very reliable conclusions across large data sets. But one of the things that can mislead us is by looking at one small experiment and saying, well, that proves thus and such, right? When most of the time, single experiments or small experiments don't prove anything, but they're indicators. And they're indicators that we can put together with a lot of other evidence, which is part of what we'll be doing in this course, is looking at leading edge studies that maybe haven't been replicated very much yet, but that we can connect to other evidence and start to go, well, this seems to indicate that, you know, thus and such might be true. So let's not, in this course, let's make an agreement not to automatically assume that because it's science, it's true. Sometimes that's the case, and sometimes that's not yet the case. One of the other things that's really beautiful and so, so valuable about science is that it's open to revolution. And that the scientific conclusions that we've drawn are, at its best, science is open to revolution when new data comes to light. So if we get new information, the conclusions we've drawn so far can be overturned. It can turn out that we were wrong, and now the conclusion is something else. And I think that's just an extraordinary strength of scientific philosophy and the scientific method. And while there are some scientific laws out there, the law of gravity is a great example that we wouldn't want to mess with and is pretty gosh darn reliable pretty much 100% of the time. Those laws of science are actually very few. And when we look at science, we can look at a lot of the conclusions that are drawn, a lot of things that are talked about in the popular media, for example, as those are provisional understandings, our best understanding to date, and open to being overturned if new information comes to light. And so in those senses, it's really important not to just automatically assume that just because it's science, it's true. Right? So we're not done yet, right? We're not fully cooked. We've still got things to learn. Let me talk a little bit about some of the limitations of science. Again, so we can just hold this in its appropriate context. One of the limitations of science comes from one of its strengths, right? The fact that we can get really granular with things and that we can measure results also means that science only looks at parts and pieces, and things that are measurable. And so a great example of this is when germ theory came along. There was huge resistance. There was a proposal that it was germs that were making people sick, but germs were invisible. It was just an idea, and they couldn't be seen, they couldn't be measured, and there was huge resistance in hospitals to washing hands. And eventually that resistance was broken through, much to our delight, those of us living in the modern day, where people do wash their hands in hospitals, and mortality rate in hospitals has gone way down just because of that one intervention. But because there was this, it wasn't at the time possible to measure germs, or it wasn't possible to see them, there wasn't a way to, it was just a proposal. Science, sort of the scientific mind, concluded germs don't exist, which of course is preposterous. But because science only looks at what's measurable, it only sees what's measurable. And if we grant science the role of being the sole arbiter of truth, it means that we can only learn things in the world and grant legitimacy and experience as true or deem as true those things that are measurable. And that actually misses a whole realm of human experience. Of course, we don't have the tools to measure everything yet. I'm not sure we will, and I'm not sure that's even appropriate. Another example is the huge explosion of interest in neuroscience is because we have new tools that can now look at the brain as in living beings, you know? 25 years ago, 30 years ago, we didn't have the capacity to do that. Now we do. And so there's a lot of interest there because it's possible to measure that now. So science looks at what's measurable, and it breaks things down into its component parts and pieces. And that actually produces particular kinds of limitations. The other thing is science isn't objective. We tend to think science is objective, and it's about as close to objective as we can get. But the reality is science isn't objective. It's heavily influenced by the prevailing view of the times, by scientists' own biases, and by the questions that get asked. Right? So the classic example of this, if you ask the question, how do celestial bodies, how do stars and planets and the sun revolve around the Earth, you'll get partial answers. And if you instead have the gall to come along and ask, well, actually, I'm not sure that's the right question. And I want to know, how does the Earth and how do the planets revolve around the sun? Well, then you might get thrown in jail for heresy, as Galileo did, and you may have to wait 300 years before you're pardoned by the Catholic Church, which just happened in 1992. So while science is open to revolution, there are powerful forces at play that anchor the status quo and insist on it at times, which can prevent science from being open, as open to revolution as it might otherwise be. And what that means is that asking questions outside of the mainstream thinking and the already sort of conventionally accepted conclusions can be dangerous. And these days, you don't so much have to worry about getting thrown in jail, thank goodness. But it does mean that if you ask a revolutionary question that is really outside the mainstream, your project may not get funded, or your career may tank, or your peers may ridicule you, right? Until you've shown, demonstrated over and over and over and over again, and you and colleagues around the world, and you start to show across multiple tests that the conclusions you're drawing are repeatable and are valid, then we start to draw new conclusions. But while science is open to revolution, it's actually can be slow to change. And it's not inherently objective, right? There are subjective forces at play, including political forces, including scientists' own biases, that all affect the questions that get asked, and therefore the answers and the results that that emerge out of that. The final limitation of science that I want to share is that science tends to look at things in parts and pieces, right? So its very strength of being able to get really, really granular and to factor certain kinds of things out of the picture so that we can see the influence of variable A only and not the confusing other influences of variables C, D, and E. That strength also results in a limitation that is by dividing things up into parts and pieces, we don't necessarily see the relationship between those different parts and pieces. And in some ways, we wind up looking, particularly when we're talking about the science of the human body, we wind up looking at parts and pieces as though they're the whole story. And that's rarely the case. So I want to talk a little bit in particular about how this works in recent brain science, because it's particularly evident there. You know, with all of the new, excitement about how we can measure things in the brain that we never could before, there tends to be just a huge frenzy of excitement when something new is discovered, like, oh my goodness, area 37X in the brain is activated and there's more blood flow in that region when you're thinking about dogs. And to me, that's about as interesting as saying, oh my gosh, when I bend my arm, my bicep contracts. It's like, well, that's nice, but that actually doesn't tell us very much. And I think where the story gets a lot more interesting is when we start to say, oh, area 37X lights up at the same time that this area over your left ear lights up, at the same time that this area in your visual cortex lights up. And what else is going on in the body at the time? What's going on with your heart? What's going on with your lungs? What's going on in your hands and your feet? What's going on with your face? And as we start to build those relationships between what's going on in your brain, which we now can see and get really granular about, and what's going on in the rest of your body, and what's going on in your behavior, that's where I think the story starts to get really interesting. But science isn't entirely up to that task yet, because one of the things that it's both good at and limited by is it tends to look at things in a very granular level and look at parts and pieces. And the limitation of that is that it overlooks, oftentimes, relationships between different aspects of the body and relationships between different aspects of being human. So I'm going to invite us all to, as we go through this course, be looking attentively for what are those relationships, and when I'm talking about a particular part of the brain, to as much as possible just kind of step back from just thinking about that part and think about the whole. The other thing that's a part of this is not only does science look at the parts and pieces, but it looks at the physical body and in general looks at living systems as fixed structure rather than an alive and living process. And We're going to be using studies of structure and studies of anatomy to illuminate a living process. Or another way to think about this is using some of the tools that have and understandings that have come out of a biomechanical model or a biomechanical understanding of the human body. We're going to be using those to try and understand a biointelligent living system. And what that means is that it's going to be at times a little bit clumsy, a little bit imperfect. Sometimes I'm going to need to extend the science or to say, okay, here's the scientific conclusion, and here's what I would suggest on top of that, or what I propose based on my understanding of how the body works, how we learn through the body. And my aim here really is to knit together the relationship between body and brain and behavior with respect to the development of social and emotional intelligence and social and emotional skills and our behavior in the world. And I'm going to be drawing from scientific research and biology, as well as experience working with people and helping them transform themselves through body-oriented practice. So let me sum up. I've talked about a few of the strengths and a few of the limitations of science. As far as strengths, science can give us very reliable results across large data sets. That's one of the huge strengths, robust, reliable results. And that is because of another of its strengths, which is that the design of studies that's replicable, that's testable, that's repeatable, that's measurable, very, very powerful method for understanding the world around us. And science is open to revolution. So those three things, very powerful strengths of science. And the limitations of science sometimes emerge out of its strengths, right? Science is not automatically truth. Science is not automatically objective. It's about as close to objective as we can get, but it's not objective in most cases. Science only sees what's measurable. And science primarily looks at parts and pieces. And these things all produce limitations that we'll have to sneak around and sort of scoot around as we talk about the body as a very holistic system. The body, the self, and behavior is a very holistic system. So I want to give you a few words of advice about how to listen to and interpret the science I'm going to be talking about in this course. First of all, I would say listen to the science as story. I will share with you various details from various bits of research. You're totally free to geek out on all of those details if that's your game. But if that's not your game, that's okay. What is most important to listen to, even if you like to geek out on the details, is the bigger story. What's the bigger picture here? What's the new story that science is telling us about the body, about learning through the body, about who we are as human beings, about how we learn? And use the details to help understand that story. And then the other thing that I would advise you to listen for are relationships. What's the relationship between, if I'm talking out about a particular part of the body or a particular aspect of the nervous system or a particular part of the brain, what's the relationship between that part of our biology and the whole rest of the symphony that's going on, the whole living process that's going on at the same time, right? So if something's lighting up over my left ear, what else is going on inside me at the same time? Okay, so listen for story, listen for relationships. When you're speaking about science, don't go out there and say science has proven X, Y, and Z, because most often that's not going to be an accurate way to speak about what I'm sharing with you in this course. For the most part, we're going to be talking about emerging studies. We're going to be talking about leading indicators. We're going to be talking about likely truths, right? We can say some conclusions are scientifically supported, but we can't necessarily say things have been proven. And I really, one of the reasons that I felt it was important to design this course is I started to hear people talking about about science in kind of misleading and inaccurate ways, and that concerned me. So I just want to encourage you to bear in mind everything that I've shared with you here and use that as context when you're speaking about science in your life and work. And for my part, I'll try to make it really clear what's well-established, like what's biology 101 that's really very clearly agreed upon, what's still emerging, and what are the pieces that I'm adding or synthesizing or proposing based on sort of an extension of the research or my conclusions, sort of marrying anecdotal evidence to lab research. So I'll try to be very clear about that, and if ever it's not clear, I invite you to ask me. So I hope this has been a useful primer and kind of gets us all on the same page in terms of how to orient to the course, and I look forward to diving into the content with you very, very soon.